Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Angie Setzer of Citizens LLC, that's out of Charlotte, Michigan, but she's in Algona, Iowa, and you might also know her as Goddess of Grain, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting, out of Waco, Texas. Angie, let's start with you. I kind of want to know where exactly Algona, Iowa is and what conditions look like on the ground today.
Yeah, we are about 2.5 hours north of Des Moines, so center of the state, in between. I would say we're basically about right in between of Spencer, Iowa, and this city, about 20 miles south of Minnesota border. So we are where a bunch of new lakes have shown up. Here over the last couple, 3 weeks, I'd say. Been pretty wet in our area. We've had a wet spring. Guys were able to get in. You know, it basically seemed like a spring comprised of 2 or 3 days of opportunity to get field work done and then 3 or 4 days of sitting, waiting for it to dry out. So we had guys just wrapping up with soybeans here a couple weeks ago. So that the bean crop looks behind compared to what we've seen and, you know, what isn't underwater. And then the corn crop looks good. Mother's Day weekend corn looks phenomenal. That's just far enough along to where, you know, some of the water hasn't bucked it near as much as some of the shorter stuff. So we'll see what happens. But I'm not usually one to bet on yield or guess on yield or anything like that. But we're probably going to be pretty hard-pressed at this point to hit those records we've been seeing the last couple, 3 years.
And you are VP of Grain at Charlotte, Michigan, for Citizens LLC. So tell me about conditions there, because I know you have to be keeping track.
Yeah, the tale of two worlds. Spring was a mess on both sides, though. So I said I suffered from backyarditis. I needed people to snap me out of it, because sitting where I was in Algona, in Iowa there, it was wet and difficult. And then all of my customers that I was talking to in Michigan were telling me the same thing. It was a wet and difficult spring. We had a lot of replant get done. We had guys that were able to get into the field the first week of May, but they were able to, they you know, no sooner got it planted than we had two days where it was 37, 38, 40 degrees for a high, and we got a driving rain. So we had a bunch of replants get done, and I was just there this past week, and you could definitely tell we're quite a bit behind, especially having driven through Illinois on I-80, where it's the garden. You can tell there in Michigan, in my territory, we're quite a bit behind. The beans are really, really struggling because we have that wet spring. And then for us, it's totally different than where I'm at in Iowa. The rain is shut off. So it's really struggling with the heat. We've got a lot of ground compaction due to the wetter conditions in the spring. And now the heat's kicked into high gear and we're not getting the rains that we need. And you can definitely see it in the crop.
And finally, one last thing, and I think you'll be open to letting me know about this. Your husband, of course, works for a grain elevator system in that part of the world where you live now, and you work for one in Michigan. What's the difference between the way the two places work, or is there very much as it relates to cash grain situations?
Yeah, it's night and day. We joke about it pretty often. There's two different worlds set up, not just weather and conditions wise, when it comes to marketing and things like that. You know, in Iowa, of course, you have so much more grain to handle. But it seems a lot of folks work really closely with their co-op, their local co-op, and that's where they head. And where in Michigan, we have a lot of on-farm storage and guys work to maximize that basis and things like that. And so it seems in Iowa, of course, there's massive amounts of supply versus there's massive amounts of demand too, but they're always, at least with the last couple of record crops that we've had, there's been a relatively large oversupply, especially when you look at the surrounding states and what they've seen. where in Michigan, we're a peninsula, of course, and so it's a bit difficult to bring grain in from outside entities unless you're coming in from Ontario or something like that. And so we have, you know, right now we're dealing with over basis, you know, 10 over corn basis and some strong bean values. And then, of course, we've got wheat where, and in Iowa right now, I think they would love an even to 10 under, if not, you know, 20 under in some of those areas. So it's, we always talk about basis, and different flows of grain, commercial holding versus on farm and stuff like that. It's really evident when you, when the two of us sit down and have conversations about what's going on in the world, you know, it's really evident how different farmers handle the cash grain marketing approach.
So I would have guessed that Iowa would have a great deal more on-farm storage than the producers in Michigan, and maybe it's by percentage of total crop.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that there's probably a you know, if you're looking at an overall bushel amount, I would say, you know, Iowa would likely blow us out of the water. But from a percentage of crop and what moves at harvest time versus what is able to sit and wait to move, you know, it's a very big difference. But of course, we're Michigan's a tiny, tiny dot on a map when it comes to grain production versus what you're seeing, you know, where I am now. It's been a great experience. It's been really eye-opening to see the different types of production and just the difference overall and farming practices between one state and the other.
Which way is better, operating through, and I'm tempted not to ask this, but operating where you have the larger part of your grain stored on your own farm or where you're putting it into, in this case, a co-op?
It definitely depends on the operator, you know, the person who's doing it and making the decisions. It's really easy to, you know, put it in the bin and pray. That's, we joke about that, you know, store and forget. And so it's really easy to do that. And there are folks that do and end up really, really regretting it. You know, from a commercial standpoint, I would imagine it'd be a lot nicer to have ownership of the grain, you know, at harvest, know what you have you know, be able to manage it accordingly. You know, from a manager standpoint, I would say that side would be nice. You know, where in Michigan, a lot of times it kind of, you can think you've got a great position on, and four out of 5 years, it might be the best move you could make, and all of a sudden it's a dogfight for bushels, and you're regretting it each, you know, every day. So it's one of those things where, you know, you just don't have the ownership side that you wish you did. You know, when farmers are capable of holding on to their crop like they are, you know, in the Michigan area, at least.
And one more question, and I'll bring Aaron at least into the conversation. We'll get Dan in just a moment, too. But I want you and Aaron to answer the same question of your customer base and maybe, Angie, of your husband's customer base as well.
Right.
What's the percentage of forward sales of corn and soybeans made for new crop in your part of Iowa and then again in Michigan?
Yeah, I can answer for Michigan. I'm not 100% sure in Iowa. I know that the conversation has been pretty consistent across the board, though. For us in Michigan, it was the most aggressive amount of sales that I had seen, you know, since I've been in charge of the elevator there. So we're going on 8 years here. And there was a point in time just ahead of Memorial Day there where, you know, of course we can manage the margin calls. It's not an issue, but it is something that you think about, you know, as an elevator manager. You know, or is my bank going to start to question me if this market rallies and I have this size of book on, you know, and I'm coughing up a lot of money every day to maintain the position. It is something that you think a great relationship with your bank. So start to get a little nervous. I'd say overall, my corn customers, and it depends on if they've got on-farm storage or how much on-farm storage, what they need to move at harvest time, et cetera. But on the corn side of things, I would say we're around 40%, and that'll slide, of course, based on, you know, where they're at and what their production looks like. Soybean wise, we're well over 50%. But I've been bearish in soybeans for about 3 years now, so my push has been anytime you get November above 10, you want to be locking in some bushels. And so a lot of my customers there that I've been working with really closely have a large amount of their beans contracted, you know, above that $10 future range, above $9.50 cash. So it makes it a little bit easier. Well, I don't know. Easier is a relative term, because I don't think watching what the markets have done over the last 3 weeks is easy for anyone, even if you have a whole boatload of sales on. But it definitely makes it, we can be a little bit more patient to see how this thing works out, at least right now, simply because they do have the amount of sales on that they do. But I said it earlier today, and I'll say it till the day I die, you always sell too much, you know, you've always sold too much when the market's rallying, and you've never sold enough when it falls out of bed. So here we sit in never enough territory, no matter how much we have sold.
Aaron Curtis of Midco, same question for you. How far along on sales do you think for new crop farmers in your area might be, both corn and soybeans?
Well, I would say probably not quite as far as what Angie is saying. At least it's kind of hard to get a good predictor of the whole customer base that we deal with. But I would say somewhere in that 30-35%. I think on beans, they're a little heavier than what they've been in past years. I think we went into the late winter, early spring time frame, and the farmer was pretty aggressive on selling old crop beans and kind of ran out of that beans to sell and was much more aggressive than normal on selling new crop beans. So I'd say 30-35%. I think the managed bushel programs continue to be pretty popular this year. So we did see some percentages of, you know, of sales being picked up via those sort of pricing models, average price programs, a typical, you know, so many 20-week programs or however many you say were pretty popular again this year because they proved to be pretty good last year. But the managed bushel programs are seeing the majority of the early sales at this point, but I think 30-35%. And then on old crop, which we still got some to buy, it's say 10-15% is kind of the average here on both old crop corn and soybeans. And I'll tell you, Todd, the last month or so, the hedging's been pretty light because the farmer just hasn't been selling much of anything with this price decline we've seen. So we do got some old crops still to buy here, and that's kind of the question here moving forward. When does the farmer decide to kind of move that? We are going to have some carry out this year, you know, a little over 2 billion corn, and it looks like 500 million beans. So somebody's going to have to carry grain into the new crop. It looks like the farmer's going to participate that if these prices continue to stay down here in these lower levels.
Your suggestion is that they'll just leave it put in the bin and then bring the new crop into town, those bushels that they would actually replace in the bin so that they'll hold the old crop into the new crop season. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I would say either apply old crop to new crop contracts or pay the minimums if they still got it in storage and carry it on at these prices. It just doesn't feel like they're very pushed right now. They just don't feel like they want to sell at these type of levels. At least that's the indication we get. Now, we could see some rally here, or if we do see some sort of a rally, maybe that changes their mind. But, you know, down here close to $8 beans, I guess I just don't see the farmer wanting to throw in the towel at those kind of levels.
So, Dan Zwicker, I have done some of the numbers, at least taking a look and saying from the top of the soybean market early in February and then just taking 25%, should that soybean tariff be put in place, and I suspect, again, we're recording on Thursday afternoon, but probably is, although we're not very far off of that price tag. I think it was $8.17 or something like that for November, and then you'd have to, you know, calculate. That would be the bottom end of that marketplace, because I don't think there'll be that much that will be lost out of the market based on what's available to ship from around the planet. So what I want to know from you is, when you look at the charts, can you see an earlier bounce in the marketplace? Because we've been, in your opinion, running about a month early as it relates to the seasonals.
Well, that's my opinion. But you got to have something to trigger it during the month of July. And I'm sure a lot of the positioning that's going on, especially ever since we kind of got those June rains back in the third week of June or whatever, people are looking at the seasonalities, and, you know, July is historically one of those months that, you know, 8 out of 10 years closes lower for the month. Only a couple months, maybe a couple times in 10 years, it'll close higher unchanged. Just looking, you know, at the big decline that we had in June, and then looking the way we're kind of starting off July here, I guess it's, you know, I think corn is going to stabilize I think wheat is going to stabilize and try to recover. And I think if those two crops can do that, they may be able to kind of hold the soybeans down at these levels, or at least keep them from going lower, and kind of see how the tariff situation and the trade situation works its way out, at least during the rest of July, and then we'll see what the August crop report is. But like I said, you know, when you look at crop rating levels and you look at the extra acres that were found to be planted in soybeans last week, we could raise the crop equal to what last year was. That's still to be determined. Month of August is going to determine that, and that same way with corn. I mean, we're just about, and a lot of it depends what the yield does, and most people were counting on a lower yield in their balance sheets. But when you look at crop rating levels, it'll be interesting to see what Monday says and whether or not it makes any difference. I don't know at this time of year. But everything does seem to be coming early. I mean, the month of June here kind of felt like the month of July, where the crop was made. Farmers are cleaning out their bins, getting ready for a new crop harvest. So it will be interesting to see if we would go counter seasonally higher here during July. And that's going to be pretty much up to the weatherman. But somewhere in here, once we get past all this stuff, we're going to start trading demand. Whether that's going to be bad demand or good demand, we'll have to wait and see. But I think the market has kind of priced in some of the best of production expectations and the worst case scenario on demand. I guess I would be optimistic that we could at least try to stabilize down at these levels anyway.
Well, Angie, I want to ask you a question about next week's WASDE. Two things. When you forward figure the USDA's grain stocks and acreage numbers in, at least the acreage numbers, that gives you, about 186 million more bushels of corn for the ending stocks, and something around 34 million more for soybeans. However, the chief economist at USDA, Mr. Johansson, has said USDA will, and this is generally their policy, incorporate whatever governmental policy is in place into the demand side. And I'm wondering how much change might we see in the WASDE report when it comes out next Thursday?
Well, it's a million-dollar question, because the USDA is going to have to either take a stance that, you know, they're in line, you know, the administration and everyone right now is saying that the farmers aren't going to feel the pinch. You know, so are they going to come out and try to do that old, you know, I think of that scene from the movie when everyone's running like crazy and the policeman standing in the middle saying, "All is well, remain calm." You know, is that what the USDA is going to do? And say all is well, remain calm, or are they going to make some major cuts? Because it's interesting to look at what we've seen, you know, with the overall outlook, you know, new crop supply and demand and carry out, even with the increase in stocks based on acreage. And, you know, you can kind of go back and forth if you want to on what the quarterly stock numbers would look like. But even with the increase in ending stocks, you're still looking at less beans on hand than what we had a year ago. Now, of course, you're probably going to see increased South American production and things of that nature. But, you know, is the USDA going to come out? Are they going to take into consideration the fact that right now new sales are the best they've been in the last several years, which isn't really a story that's been picking up a lot of traction, because it doesn't necessarily fit into the current market narrative. So, you know, it could be easy that they come in and say, okay, well, you know, maybe our exports to China are going to be down. We anticipate that we'll see a reduction in that, but we'll see an increase in sales elsewhere because of the lack of ability, you know, a lack of supply out of Brazil or Argentina to go in that direction. I mean, it's really one of those things, like you said, where it's going to be a million-dollar question. Now, I haven't looked, you know, 100% at the new crop corn sales or anything of that nature with what we have with Mexico, but those are our two prime, you know, at this point in time, it seems our two prime prime issues, you know, when looking at what's going on with trade policy in this administration is what is, you know, what is going to happen, you know, when it comes to imports or exports, you know, imports by Mexico or exports into Mexico, and what's going to happen with bean exports into China seem to be the two main wild cards. So I'll be interested to see, you know, of course, I would much rather we were just trading our ho-hum. You know, remember when we were complaining that there wasn't any volatility in the market last winter, sort of set up, be a lot easier, you know, and I said that last week on Twitter, if a genie offered me three wishes, I'd take one, and that is to know what the USDA report is going to say 3 days before it's released. And everyone kind of said, wouldn't you want to know market reaction? I said, I'll let everyone else guess market reaction. I just want the numbers, you know, so it'll definitely be a big wild card to see, and you know, the question will be, what's Sonny going to do? You know, Secretary Perdue, what is his stance going to be? And what is the chief economist's stance going to be? And is that going to make the Trump policies look bad? And, you know, we all know how Mr. President feels about looking bad. You know, I question whether or not we'll see significant cuts or not in next week's numbers.
Well, Reuters did ask this question of Chief Economist Johansson, that is, and he said that they would, and it's long been their policy, that they do incorporate what current policy is. They don't make any expectations about future policy.
Yeah.
So we'll see what that is. However, if you want just the 3 days in advance, if nothing changes, I can give that to you.
Right.
It's 1.763 billion bushels for corn on carryout 2018-19 and 419 million bushels, as you said, for soybeans. You didn't say that, but you said it was less than last year, and that's where we stand. So I'm wondering, Aaron Curtis, when you hear those numbers and you think about looking into next week, I guess it's really about the expectation of the trade and how much of the demand, I won't call it destruction, but demand lessening might be built into this marketplace already, along with a bigger crop. Do you think both of those have been done? Is there much downside risk in the marketplace based off the WASDE report if USDA does incorporate the new policy?
It's kind of hard to look at November beans at dropping $2 here over the last few weeks and not think that a big portion of this is already factored in. I mean, we've got to keep in mind we already know higher acres numbers from last week, and expect, you know, some sort of adjustment probably on bean exports. I just don't know if it'll be next week or not. I think it's going to be hard-pressed at this point with the uncertainty we have to see, you know, bean exports up towards 2.3 billion bushels for next year. Of course, we started out with quite a bit higher number this last year and had to fade that as time went on with that big Brazil crop we had last year. So we could see something similar again. So I think looking at the numbers right now, you got to think that ending stocks continue to build on corn and beans for new crop with the demand uncertainty, the fact that crop ratings continue to be very good. And it looks like we have a pretty big crop coming our way. But when you also look at the futures, you think that this is a futures market, right? So it looks like a big portion of that, I would say, is factored in at this point. And I would expect, you know, maybe some sort of muted reaction to the numbers next week, unless we come out with some really big surprises. Of course, anymore we trade versus what the analysts expect, not what the actual numbers say. So we'll have to get a better feel on what that expectation is going into next week, and see what that variance could be. But I would say, at least on the soybean side, a lot of this bad news has been thrown at the market.
Would you agree with that most of the bad news, Dan, has already been built into the current pricing for soybeans in particular?
Well, you know, that's subjective. That's hard to kind of determine. Now, I was told by somebody that's smarter than I am that USDA is not going to mess around with the 18-19 balance sheets next week, which was kind of a shock to me, but I guess we'll see whether or not they did. I always thought they accounted at least for the acres, you know, because that's the one thing that they do know is the change of acres from the March report, and that's what they've been using. Now, whether or not they change the yield and whether or not they change demand, I guess we'll see. But somebody told me that they weren't going to mess around with new new crop supply demand tables. They're basically going to wait to the August report and then come out. But I guess I got mixed signals on that. I just don't know. I always thought they kind of reflected some of what they found out in the June report, but that may not be the case.
Yeah, they clearly can take, like at the end of the year, I know for the grain stocks in that fourth quarter, you can almost, for soybeans, not for corn, because you've got a pretty good accounting for the soybeans, you can just pretty clearly take that number and forward calculate that right into the next WASDE in October. And I would think they would use the acreage numbers. And the yield numbers wouldn't change. They'll leave the yield numbers right.
I guess my question, I'd like to see what the other panel members say. How did USDA miss these acres numbers? What changed from March 1st farmer thinking to actual planting season during May? There's a lot of those changes, especially up in the northwestern part of the growing region, probably more so than down here in the central and eastern part.
We can get that answer from everybody, but just so that farmers or others listening, so USDA upped corn acreage by 1.1 million acres and the soybeans by 575,000. So what do you think changed, Aaron?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, farmers just like to plant stuff. I mean, I know that sounds pretty simplistic, but I think when push came to shove, I think in the spring things just got planted in some of these areas that typically maybe take some prevent plant kind of acres, got stuff planted. I think a lot of it, what it comes down to, is just hard to leave some of this stuff unattended here as we move through the spring time frame that maybe they had plans for in the winter to not plant.
Yeah, I think a lot of the same. I think perhaps what we saw evident in the numbers and the change in the numbers is how quickly the USDA it's not like they went out and asked every producer what they were doing. So a lot of times the survey, even if you look at the report or the summary of the numbers that they put out last week, there's still a pretty large percentage. I mean, a large percentage is, it can turn into a big amount of numbers when you're looking at 88 million, 89 million acres. You get a 4% swing, and that can be very different. So I think part of it just has to do with the ebb and flow of actual survey information and the change in direction. If you look at the summary set up on the USDA's last page that they put out with the acreage numbers, in several of the last 20 years, I think 16 out of the last 20, they've overestimated corn acres in the June report. And I believe it's 13 out of the last 20, they've overestimated soybean acres in the June report. So there's still changes that will come about. And so it could be, I think, especially in an area like Illinois, where you had really reasonably or really awesome planting conditions. I mean, there were some guys that I talked to in parts of Illinois that were planting wet holes that hadn't been planted since 2012, so of course they're able to get out, and it wouldn't surprise me at all when conditions are nice to see an increase in corn on that side. So the increase, both increases really didn't surprise me, but I think it just shows the overall shifts that you can have when it comes down to taking survey information and extrapolating that. And, one of the bigger problems that we have, of course, is lack of response when it comes to USDA surveys, when it comes on farm survey responses. The USDA said that's been an issue, and it's been a gripe that a lot of folks have had in the market structure for quite some time, that perhaps with all the technology we have, there's a better way, but for now this is the best way that we've got, and I think it just shows how we can shift depending on who you ask from one month to the next.
Hey Dan, ignoring the fundamentals, what do your charts say today about direction? And I know it's trend is your friend, but direction and potential movement in both the corn and the soybeans?
Well, I guess what concerns me the most is the lead option bean. This $8 level, has been the stopping point of that over the last 3 years or so. If we start losing the eight, I would be awful concerned that we slide down another 50 cents. Now, you know, I don't want to panic anybody, but beans have a tendency to move in these 50 cent blocks, you know, whether it's $8, $8.50, $9, $9.50, $10, $10.50, you know, everything is kind of give or take a few pennies. So I think technically, I definitely would like to see this $8 bean hold in here. I'd get awful nervous if that starts giving away, that we're going back to the $7.50 area. And that same way with corn. I think corn, you know, kind of needs to hold this $3.50 area, or all of a sudden then you begin to, you know, talk about a slide down into the $3.20s or $3 area. And that's what probably worries me more than anything. We're sitting here, you know, the first week of July, and, you know, we're at prices that would be normally what we would consider harvest prices. And, you know, we haven't even begun to see the harvest and the harvest pressure that's going to come with it. And just like on our panel that we had last week, Kim mentioned that it was going to be a struggle for him to kind of get his elevator empty for a new crop harvest. And I guess if that is the a concern throughout the growing region, that worries me too, as we, you know, move on into harvest.
Now, that was something that Kim Holzapfel knew was coming his way all the way back in January. I don't know. How's Midco positioned? Are you going to struggle to make space in the operation, do you think? You would be part and parcel of that TGM.
Yeah, just speaking for our grain companies, I think there is quite a bit of grain to move here, Todd, and there is obviously quite a concerted effort to try to get things as close to empty as possible. And the fact that you look at some of the maturity levels on corn, and it's coming at us pretty quickly. It looks like we're going to have something towards this side of a earlier harvest, the way it looks at this point, if we continue to see things move along the way they're going now. So that maybe raises the stress level just a touch out in the country, Todd, but it's going to continue to be quite a frantic pace here to get things kind of emptied out. And if, you know, farmers still have some stuff on his side out in the country that needs to move as well. So like I said, somebody's going to have to carry some stuff over here based on what the carryout projections look like, but going to be like a little bit of harvest before harvest here as we continue to get kind of get stuff moved out to what looks like not only an early harvest, but today looks like another big one. So it's going to be quite a bit of truck traffic, quite a bit of rail traffic moving here over the next 60 days, Todd.
Do you have the same concerns for Iowa and Michigan, Angie?
In Iowa, yeah. I mean, there'll definitely be some issues there. You're going to see some on-farm stuff moving. But I do know there's been conversations that I've had with folks out that way that, you know, they were prepared to hold it anyway. They kind of came around the first of the year knowing that they were going to have to hold over, you know, a chunk in either piles or the cold condition or bunkers or something of that nature. I mean, that's been the plan. And thank God in a year like this year, there's been relatively large amounts of carry that you could capture in order to make it worth your while to do that. Michigan, totally opposite. I mean, we've still got a good amount of on-farm stuff to move. And, you know, basis, it may not increase, you know, exponentially to do so. But with the delay, you know, the fact that we're not seeing in northern Iowa and in Michigan, you know, we're not looking at the same issue that, you know, a lot of folks in Illinois and other areas are, where, you know, you're going to be looking at combines in August, you know, just looking at the crops and how quick we are. You know, we're 2-3 weeks ahead of where we were a year ago. And so for us, I think we've not only got a little bit more time to move it, you know, but in Michigan specifically, we have a lot less to move. And the Canadian impact is not as large as it's been because of the concerns over what's going to happen with trade. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors that are going to kind of, we're going to have to take into consideration. But if I were a farmer holding on to old crops sitting in central Illinois, I definitely wouldn't be waiting to to see what happens with faces at this point, because every day that goes by, you're another day closer to harvest for sure, especially out here.
On that note, I think we'll get a final thought from each of you. Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, I'd like you to start for me, please.
Well, there's really no good answers down here. I guess this is one of the reasons why I retired from the advisory business. but I guess, you know, I'm optimistic that things are going to work out on the trade situation, and it's going to turn out, but there's no guarantees. That's just my opinion. I think Trump has a stronger hand. The problem is short term, anything can happen, but longer term, I think he's going to win it. So I am quite optimistic that, you know, we may be, you know, looking at our calendar year lows in here, and we may turn this thing into a counter-seasonal climb as we go on into harvest.
Aaron Curtis of Midco.
I agree with Dan. I think we're getting close to some sort of a low in here. Keep an eye on the wheat market. European wheat market continues to be a little bit of a concern. That's helping Chicago out a little bit. Hopefully that can help pull corn up as well. I think we don't want to lose sight, though, that while most of the negativity surrounding corn and soybeans has been on trade, the crop does look really good in most parts of the Corn Belt, so it looks like we got another big one coming. Looks like July is going to continue to be on the warm side. We're just going to need some timely rain, so either some sort of resolution to the trade or some sort of weather concern is going to be needed, probably to spark some of this negativity to the sidelines. So continue to keep an eye on the weather here, as it's still just early July. We got quite a bit of finishing to do here.
And Angie Setzer of Citizens LLC.
Yeah, I agree with both parties here. Dan, I think that we actually do see a resolution. I wouldn't, you know, I said a week ago I thought 2 weeks we'd see something solved. So I guess maybe I'm crazy to say, but I think by mid next week, I wouldn't be surprised to see some concessions made and hopefully some progress made in that direction with China. And then I think maybe then we can start to focus on Europe and NAFTA. I think everyone in the world kind of realizes that Trump is maybe crazy like a fox, you could say, in the sense that he'll push it and he'll continue to push it. And you can either try to get along or you can keep fighting. And I think most of the world parties, the global parties, have shown that they want to try to get along and maintain a solid global trade type partnership and interaction and world economy too. I mean, you're looking at, you know, if issues in China really do develop and come to a head as some have predicted, you know, that's not good for them. That's not good for their economy, and it's not good for the global economy. So I think we'll see a resolution, hopefully timely, I think the same. I think we start to see the market maybe work its way back up towards the, you know, at least to a reasonable level to where you can feel comfortable starting to market some more grain here, you know, and especially for those guys with grain on farm. I hope that's the case for them.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can listen to the whole of our programming anytime you'd like online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Angie Setzer of Citizens LLC. She's out of Algona, Iowa. Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.